You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Before I get into the podcast today, I wanted to let you know that this conversation was recorded prior to the nationwide requirement for shelter in place. So it sounds like we're not practicing adequate social distancing, but this was a conversation from months ago. So please don't email me about how I'm adding to the problem. We're practicing it now. We're hoping everybody's safe and healthy out there, and we're trying to keep people entertained and informed. So take a listen and don't email me about me being in the same room as Tyler Huckabee. The intro track you're listening to right now is called In the Light by my good buddy SJ. He just released an EP with the same name called In the Light. If you haven't checked him out already, follow him on Spotify. It's just SJ, and then follow him on Instagram at Here Is SJ, HereIsSJ. What up, baby? It's the Preaching to Sneakers podcast, the podcast nobody has ever asked for and continues to not ask for. On today's episode of the podcast, I interviewed the relevant media czar, Tyler Huckabee. Sat down with him in Nashville, and we got to talk about both being homeschooled, going to Bible college, about relevant media, talking about his career as a writer, and also some of the issues around consumerism, celebrity culture, and politics, and optics on social media. He's an incredibly smart dude, very well-spoken, and I learned a lot from our conversation. So he uses some big words, so pull out your dictionary, and I hope you enjoy my conversation with Tyler Huckabee. Great to meet you.
Great to meet
Thanks
you.
Thanks for coming
to
South.
Oh, my God. This has been very...
I feel like we have quite a history of...
I guess that's true.
We've never really talked to each other. Well, we talked on the phone briefly this summer.
I talked to you on the phone this summer for a piece that I don't even think... That didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because a lot of things changed at the magazine or at the company since that.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted to talk to you because you have such an insight into this whole world that I think is helpful... even just for me and the people that hopefully listen to this podcast. So for those that are just tuning in, this is Tyler Huckabee, who is the assistant editor.
Senior
editor at Relevant Media.
Mm-hmm.
You hear him on the Relevant podcast pretty consistently. I mean, you're running the podcast now, you and Jesse.
No, I am on the podcast, right? Jesse's the... He's in charge of the pod. He's in charge of the
but
company.
But I am now on
every podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And you also have a very thorough Twitter game, which I appreciate. Do you also have a brother in town or some? Or
in town?
Some other Huckabee on Twitter that I follow.
Victor.
Are you related?
We are not brothers in that sense. No. I don't think so.
Spiritual brothers.
According to my parents, and I have not gotten yet to that stage of life where you start really digging into the family tree or anything, so I don't know when I don't know where my ancestors came from, but according to my dad, there was only one Huckabee that came over on the boat.
Okay, so Mike Huckabee, Sarah Sanders Huckabee.
And I have not yet found the connections, and I'm not super interested in doing that, but there is some sort of, I think we're all part of the same... The branches are all from the same.
That's so interesting. But y'all, I've seen y'all talk back and forth on Twitter, not to be creepy.
Victor's great.
Yeah. He like started a Netflix show or something.
Yeah, he wrote Tony Hale.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to get Tony Hale on the podcast. I sent him a hoodie. He follows my account. That dude is hilarious.
Tony Hale's one of the, I just wrapped his, and I didn't even know he was on it. I didn't recognize his voice until the end, but he's on this new, you know that I like comics, and he's on this Harley Quinn show that's like, you can't watch. It's on DC's exclusive app thing. There's
very
no
exclusive
reason for anyone to watch it. But Tony Hale is a voice of one of the characters on it. And it's great TV, and I'm mad that nobody gets to see it because it's as good as anything else he's ever done on Veep or Arrested or anything.
Gosh,
like that.
Gosh, yeah. And he seems like such a legitimately decent guy.
He seems
like
great.
I heard him on the Dax podcast, yeah. I think, and he seems like somebody that would be the best friend or like cares deeply about people and about like using his career for good.
I think that's really hard to do. I've interviewed him twice for Relevant,
mm-hmm.
and he remembered me the second time, which does not happen because this guy talks to people all day long,
yeah.
So he doesn't have to remember me. And then he did what nobody does. He shared the piece that I wrote about him, which always feels like I think that's a good thing. Like I want to tell myself that I'm not writing to be liked.
Right.
You know, like, oh, who cares? I'm going to tell the truth about
him.
This
is for the love of the, yeah.
In this case, telling the truth about him is just, he's genuinely just a really lovely guy who's fun to talk to. And if there's any dirt there under the rug, my journalistic skills couldn't pick up on it.
It seems like it's hard to be, do you call him a comedian or is he an actor? It seems hard to become famous in the comedic sphere without just being super obtuse and aggressive and like pushing the limit.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like he just is a good actor, also really funny, and has kind of a niche character style that appeals to a lot of people. And in turn, he's also not a racist, and he's not like
the perks.
Yeah, and he's not he doesn't have a slew of cuss words and everything.
He's married. He's got a happy family life. Yeah, he just seems like a good, like a genuinely good dude. And he seems like he's primed for one of those like HBO series where he does his dramatic turn. You know, this guy can really act. Like I think that could happen at any moment.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Because he has played kind of second fiddle to. I mean, he really stood out in Veep. Did you watch that whole series?
It's one of my favorites. I love it.
It's so good. My wife, I mean.
He won a Emmy for it.
Yeah. And my wife and I were so like, on one end, it's like, should we be watching this at all? Because it's so vulgar. But then on the other end, I remember like aching, crying, laughing. It's one of the first episodes that Selena sits down at some dinner and she's got to pray for the food. And she goes, Holy Mother of God. oh my God. But
whatever, they would just let Selena be Selena and go off on one of those like 2 minute long, just like, it was like a floor routine for a gymnast where she just unleashes. Just
and it's pure ad lib.
like profanity I had never heard of that I was conditioned from, and it worked beautifully.
Yes.
But you're also, there are parts where you're like, I don't know if I should be. I kind of thought I was past all that. Like, you know, I was raised in that, but I'm.
Me too.
I thought that, oh, I don't care. Whatever.
I can compartmentalize it.
They can, you know, tear somebody's entrails out on camera and I don't care. And then I'd watch some Veep stuff.
That's a string of words. Yeah. And it's and they make such a good, like, caricature out of the vice president position that I had never experienced before.
Same.
And it was just such pure comedy. I was so happy that we paid the whatever $15 a month for it. I didn't know who you were until everyone started talking about my account on Relevant. Like I had listened to the podcast before, but I never really internalized who all the players were in the podcast. And then y'all had some kind of commentary on my account, and then I started paying attention to you and thought you were incredibly interesting.
Oh, thank you.
And
I think that's good.
Yeah, no, that is good. And
good.
And like you have some takes online that are surprising given your position in a pretty like mainstream Christian publication.
Uh-huh.
And so I appreciate that because it's like boldness to be able to say like, hey, I'm secure enough in the things I believe. I'm not going to sell out to try to appease the mm-hmm. common denominator of our bigger audience.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a dicey field to play in, like being the senior editor of a magazine that has a Christian readership.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying your views aren't Christian. I'm just saying they don't
lean
towards, and I don't know anything about your faith background, but I'm saying they don't lean to the mainstream sometimes, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
And so
I think, thank you.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring you on to hopefully dig into that a little bit.
Sure.
If you could briefly maybe tell me about, because I read that you went to Moody in Chicago. Uh-huh. So you have a Christian seminary? Did you go to the?
I did not go to seminary.
Okay.
No. So their undergrad, Moody Bible Institute.
Yep.
In Chicago, Illinois. Is a extremely conservative evangelical, not on the record fundamentalist, but they would certainly have some fundamentalist leanings and people in there who would call themselves fundamentalists.
Did you grow up that way? Were you homeschooled?
I was homeschooled.
As was I. Rep it.
Yeah. All right. What are the odds? When did I talk to somebody?
Not I.
but yes, I was homeschooled. And I'm from Nebraska. I was raised in the Midwest in a very small town. And then moved to Chicago to go to Moody, and that's
culture shock.
It was a culture shock, and I loved it. I adored like
because just being with new types of people.
Yeah, and if you don't know, Moody is actually situated. It's right. It's in the Loop. It's right downtown Chicago. You could walk by it, and people do in Chicago every day, and not know it's there. It's quite small. But for me, you know, for the first my freshman year, I walked around with my neck craned up to the sky, like how do they make buildings this big? That whole I was very shell shocked and culture shocked, but I fell in love with it right away. I still love Chicago, and
great pizza, great wind.
The pizza, the wind. I don't miss it this time of year, but in general, I do miss it. But it's it was very in line with my upbringing at the time, which was quite conservative culturally and very evangelical, and did not strike me for the most part as strange. Although, you know how when you're raised very conservative, every now and then you meet somebody, you're like, oh, I thought I was conservative.
Right. It's like, oh, your genes are pretty high.
So there, and that creates this little hierarchy.
Right.
But I really, and this is not true for a lot of people, but Moody was made for people like me. You know, I'm a straight white guy. I had a good, largely really positive experience at Moody, and it was not.
You didn't have a deconstruction at that time?
Not in college at all. No. Little bits and pieces, but not.
But it
really.
it just built on your upbringing.
Yeah, that's what a lot of those institutions kind of aim to do. And there were people that I look back on and experiences there, and even professors who taught me things that I still look on very fondly, and that were very that informed a lot of my current theology and philosophy and life outlook. I don't think a lot of them would want to take credit for those things, but they inadvertently sort of pointed me in a direction that they probably just didn't go themselves. Haven't so far gone themselves.
Interesting.
And I think that happens a lot for a lot of people.
So what happens after college for you?
I stayed in Chicago, and where a lot of my what we'll call deconstruction really began at a job I got right outside of college, which was at a church that was in Boys Town there in Chicago, where I was put in charge of. They had this sort of homeless ministry thing that they did, and it was like a lot of these Christian ministries are. It was not well funded, and this was run by the Southern Baptist Convention, so there was a lot of. I was not equipped to be working there at all, but I was running the place. And I didn't know.
Well, you're all we've got, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's $18,000 a year.
Oh, $18,000, what a help. That would have been nice, but that was not what you had. And it really just amounted to dinner once a week
was the
extent of it. And then some sort of
you have to raise support.
Prayer and lesson. The support came, the money that we had was, the SBC did provide, but if I told you I think you would be shocked. I'm still shocked. And I don't. It was literally like a loaves and fishes thing. Like, well, I guess this is what we're using tonight.
Yeah.
I hope people aren't too hungry. But I learned so much there. And Boys Town.
Because you're getting exposure to real suffering.
To real stuff. And for the first time, a lot of the questions that I'm being asked about God just don't. I know what I'm supposed to say, but you can't. It just doesn't work. This doesn't answer this question. It was and remains a very gay area of Chicago. So almost everybody that we had there was LGBTQ of some kind, And so that's all anybody wanted to talk about. It's the last thing I wanted to talk about. Because I don't want to tell anybody, like, let's talk about food stuff.
Right.
Don't you have any questions about Calvinism? Or
yeah, predestination. Yeah. Yeah, so, so you, conservative Nebraska boy in Chicago, right, in an LGBT area, serving the LGBT homeless at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are now having to wrestle with what you actually believe about some of these things because people are in front of you saying, I'm fully a person and fully have all these things going on, and you want to talk to me about God, but...
And honestly, they were ministering to me too. That was that's such a cliche, but it was such a huge part of it, was they kept me, like, I didn't have enough money to eat or to live or to take public transit around or anything like that, and they... I was helped by so many of the people who didn't have anything.
Wow.
And that just throws a lot of your preconceived notions about what you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to live, what you're supposed to think, and who is offering who what.
Yeah.
You know, because like I had to get over really fast my ego about, like, well, no, I'm the one who's here to minister to you guys, not the other way around. And
that's pretty humbling.
That really threw everything into a tailspin.
Because, like, these people that... You know, at the time, what year is this?
This would have been 2007.
Yeah, so like in 2007, the church, Big C Church, Southern Baptist Convention says, you know, this is a lifestyle that we cannot support.
Right.
Yet these people are literally giving you life for, or like sustenance.
Food that they don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's challenging every bit of worldview that you grew up with. Like, these people are living in sin and are unrepentant, yet they're serving you in a way that you want to be able to serve them.
Uh-huh. And manifesting the sort of spiritual life. And because here I am, and I'm, in my mind, I'm doing it. This is like playing the Christian video game on hard mode. I'm living, I'm working with the homeless. I'm 23 years old. And this is where I'm supposed to really, like, you know.
This is it. You're on mission.
Everything I'd always been told was, I mean, it's hard, but the sense of satisfaction you'll feel.
Ma'am.
Money can't compare. And I was like, well, money would be nice.
A little heat every once in a while would be good.
And B, I'm not enjoying this.
My attitude is
I'm
poor.
Not getting any spiritual nothing out of this situation.
Those memory verses are only going so far right now. I would really love a double cheese.
You know what I mean? Like that. Uh-huh. Does that make sense? So that was really the beginning, and it was a very difficult year, but it did end up. Well, I was only there for a year, and then ended up going back to Lincoln, Nebraska after that to sort of put things back together and try to figure out.
Because you were struggling after
that.
I was
struggling. I didn't know I didn't know if I believed any of this or what to think. And I obviously couldn't work for the SBC anymore. Like, that wasn't going to happen. I think they were fine with that.
And it's a mutual. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, I just went back and started bartending. And that's where things sort of coalesced in a different way, I suppose.
Interesting. Do you have a signature drink?
It was... I mean,
or
at
it was
the time,
like vodka tonics.
Remember,
and
this was like 2008, so it was, everybody was trying to be Don Draper. So I made old fashioned.
Old fashioned.
So
let me get an old fashioned.
Oh, I could make. Everybody thought they were Don Draper, and so did I. I was part of the problem, but that was
it's such
at
a good
that
point,
time especially.
Everyone who was watching Mad Men is like, no one. Everyone's like old enough to drink now. Let me get an old fashioned. All the bartenders rolling their eyes, like
these guys coming in with their thrift store suits, like, two sizes
let
too
me
big.
Peel this orange some more
their,
for you.
Their LA looks, hair slicked back. It was like, man, their I don't think it's. That's not the thing that's separating you from Don Draper. It's not the hat.
It's just the overall swag that you don't have. And you're in Nebraska, sir.
Yeah, I don't think
Kevin.
It's...
God dang it. I remember you in high school, Kevin, with your cargos. Anyway, so you're back in Nebraska. You're bartending. I mean, where does writing come in? And, I mean, Relevant existed then.
Yeah, Relevant existed then. And I wanted to – I enjoyed writing and had always enjoyed writing and had gotten a few things published at Relevant at the time, which was just like little freelance gigs that I was
– Was it commentary on culture or was it
– Yeah, it was reviews. It was – I think the first thing I published for Relevant may have been a – this is exactly right – a Bon Iver – I think it was a Bon Iver. I can't remember which album, but I think it was a review of that. So
one of the early ones.
Pretty standard white guy Christian, like finding God in Bon Iver at times. It's not really there, but if you squint, you can
if
find,
you squint, find or something. You could fall asleep because it's incredibly melodic and peaceful.
So I had done a few, and honestly,
I'm a Bon Iver fan.
Oh,
too,
yeah, nobody. It's easy to make fun of him, but it's hard to hate him.
Yeah,
because it's just too.
Because it's really good. Yeah, carry on.
And then, so I had gotten a few bylines there, and I had started doing some other work for, I did a little bit of writing for a short-lived TV show, and honestly, Relevant called me out of the blue one day. It was very unexpected. They said, we had a position open up, we like your writing, would you be interested in interviewing?
Sweet. It's nice to be wanted.
It was. That was extremely gratifying.
Let me go back to the TV show. Was it on the air?
It was on air. So this was a really wonderful time of life. The TV show, I don't think anybody listening would have ever heard of it. It was called Footnote. It was on WGN.
Okay.
Like 2 a.m. But it was like it was paid for by a Christian organization. They really wanted to do some sort of youth, like not a Christian TV show, but a TV show made by Christians type thing to try to
somewhat of a switchfoot.
Yeah,
of
sort
TV
of the switchfoot
shows.
of the TV show world. And we didn't know what we were like. We were a bunch of I don't know why we were hired to do this, but I look back at it, it's a little dated, but I'm still proud of
the season
we put together. And it was kind of a documentary type show. We just picked a different topic every week and shot a few interviews about it and traveled a lot. And it was
probably a great first experience to pivot your career.
Oh, I traveled. The team was really great. I loved the experience a lot. And that kind of confirmed, like, I like creative work.
Yeah.
I like this. This feels good.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Relevant opportunity came along, which was something that was more like about writing, actually, I was pretty.
And what role was that?
Started out as a web editor.
Web editor, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And what year was that?
This would have been 2012.
2012, and you've been there ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to stay 8 years somewhere is pretty significant.
Yeah,
in 2020.
It's been off and on because I started assistant editor, and then I was promoted to managing editor shortly thereafter. And then when I moved here, that was in Orlando,
mm-hmm.
which is where Relevant is based out of.
Mm-hmm.
I moved here to get married. A year later in 2013, I moved here and I bumped around. I did freelance for a little while, and then I worked for a startup for a little bit, a startup website. And then when that startup went down, then Relevant said we could use a senior editor, and I said, okay.
Wow, so you've done a lot.
I guess I have.
Such is the millennial existence.
It doesn't feel like it until you say it all out loud. But
right, yeah. It's like if we break it all down, all of us are searching for our landing place. All right, well, so, I mean, what does it look like at Relevant now? I mean, it's such a bigger thing than it was. It's a terrible way of saying that, but it's a media conglomerate now, for lack of a better term. What does it look like for you on a daily basis? I'm just curious. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fortunately, I don't know if you're aware of this, but digital journalism is thriving. Now is the time. If you are considering a career in it, strike while the iron is hot.
People are reading a lot more now than they were.
This is now. 10 years ago. Trust in the news has never been higher.
And print media too is a close
second. Thriving. Thriving. I've been there, like started in 2012, so I've been able to see sort of the full arc of when digital media really got going, and Relevant had already existed for a while and carved out its niche, but then things really took off. BuzzFeed got really big, and that lifted a lot of brands, including Relevant, really
people
high.
Were looking for a Christian version.
People were clicking on, it was, and for a few years, it was really the boom years, the boom part of the industry. And then the kind of pivot to video happened, and then that didn't end up happening, and that hurt everybody. And I think everyone's just sort of wondering, how are we going to crack this new world now? And that's a struggle that we've had at Relevant, obviously. It's mm-hmm. a struggle everywhere. But the brand itself, in terms of the need, is there something happening at the intersection of Christian faith and pop culture? Is that worth analyzing? Is something happening there that's worth analyzing? And the answer is that's what we're trying to find out.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be, because it's so influential to our lives, even as people that are trying to follow Jesus, like this stuff is at the forefront. Mm-hmm. I mean, fighting for our attention all the time. Mm-hmm. It's nice. The thing I like about Relevant is that it does give a realistic way to deal with all these things that we're going to be talking about with our coworkers and our friends either way.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. That's the goal. And that's what I'd like to, as the definition of what culture is, has sort of expanded. Because it's not just TV shows anymore. Culture is in everything. And in America, culture is really hard to pin down. What's culture and what's just consumption? What's just marketing or turning me back, which is the realm that you've really tried to inhabit. Like, is this a branding thing? Is this a ministry tool? Is this, and dividing that line, that's a daily struggle. And I don't know that I personally have figured out how to do it very well, because it's hard to tell what temperature the water is that you've been swimming in all your
life. That's a good point because people will just in the context of my account, like, people want to see it as a black and white thing, one way or the other. Either it's a streetwear brand, mm-hmm. or it's a ministry tool, or it's a call out tool, or it's a comedy tool. And since the beginning, I've had no plan or strategy. Like, I've been figuring this thing out the whole time. But it's all those things. But there's value in evaluating all of that. Like, it, from the Relevant perspective, I think it can be both a ministry tool and a pure, like, media, like, find out what's going on in the world tool. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're saying, is like riding that line to see, hey, we're not really a fully everyone convert to Christianity thing, but we're also not a fully BuzzFeed just view into culture, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I think that's the tricky part about it. There's a lot of tricky parts about that, but it's that people want an easier label than that, right?
Yes.
That doesn't make, because we're dealing with, and this is part of living in the internet era, we're dealing with a lot of things we don't really have words for right now.
Yeah.
And there will probably be boxes for what Preachers and Sneakers is doing, for what Relevant's doing. There will be labels for that down the road, but they don't really exist right now.
Yeah.
So people are asking,
what's the purpose of this?
Kim Kardashian has made this pivot to working in justice reform. She's doing some amazing stuff. Truly. I take back every bad thing I ever said about the woman. Mm-hmm. What she's done in terms of trying to get nonviolent drug offenders out of what I think anybody would consider to be an exorbitant jail sentence, surprise,
yep.
is extremely commendable.
Yeah.
So we post about that because that is important. We believe that's important to anybody.
Regardless of who's doing it, act is meaningful.
Part of being a healthy spiritual person is taking an interest in real justice reforms, which is what's happening. And so we post about that, and somebody says, so you think Kim Kardashian, I thought Relevant was a Christian, Matt, and now you say Kim Kardashian. So it's hard to tell people what we're saying there. Either you buy,
because it looks like you're being wishy-washy.
Yeah. Either you buy into the idea or you don't. And we don't have the time, and you don't have the time or interest to lay out the entire philosophy in every single thing that we write.
Yeah, I mean, I get wanting to be consistent and true to your values, but I think what we probably have in common is that there are some things that we just don't know, and some things are worth highlighting, even if we don't have a basis or a side that we mm-hmm. land on. Like, for me, the sneakers. I really don't care about the sneakers that much. Like, people think I either hate these pastors or hate materialism or hate rich people. I mean, I live in Dallas. I go to SMU. Like, I am in one of the wealthiest parts of the country, or in the South at least. And I don't hate any of those things. I, like, the whole thing started because I knew about sneakers because I liked sneakers. Mm-hmm. And then the commenters made it a bigger discussion than ever I intended.
It was amazing to behold from the sidelines.
Yeah, and
I couldn't believe it.
And it was so out of control, and I had no concept on how to handle that kind of thing. Because, like, I mean, you see viral things all the time, like, it growing exponentially, and me not doing anything about it except having posting these freaking pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then it starts developing into this conversation that now I have to have, or to the people that are following, now I have, like, the New York Times is calling me asking what my angle is. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean,
it's an Instagram account.
Yeah, it's an Instagram account. Like, I was just trying to be funny, but also, like, some of these points do.
Exactly. Yeah,
do make sense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, Kim Kardashian doing a lot of good for getting people out of prison. Like, how do you argue with that? Or how do you argue with, like, people being pissed that this dude is making millions of dollars off of preaching about a guy that was born in a manger and killed on a cross. So not to self-serve myself too much, but I would like to maybe hear your perspective on when the account blew up and y'all saw it, because y'all did a few pieces on it that I listened to from afar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know Cameron is friends with a lot of the guys I was posting about, and so he felt some type of way, and I totally understand it. And a lot of people thought that I had an animus towards some of these guys, and I really don't, but I get it. So I would just like to hear, it's just entertaining for me to hear about your perspective.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, I don't think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this.
I will.
I don't think when it first started blowing up, I was not a regular part of the podcast at that point.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But we definitely talked about it.
I remember hearing your voice.
I know I have talked about it on the podcast. I don't think when it first started happening.
Okay.
I don't think so. But we definitely, it was a huge topic of conversation, obviously, at Relevant, because this was right at, like you said, these are a lot of the guys you were posting about, especially originally, were people that we had on many times on the podcast. And I wouldn't say I'm friends with them. I'm friendly, maybe.
Friendly,
some of these
interacted
guys.
With
yeah,
they
yeah.
know who you or who Relevant is.
They would, I don't know, they probably wouldn't know my face, but they would maybe
know
your tweets.
Or your tweets, yeah, yeah, okay.
So when that started happening, I think there was some defensiveness from some people at Relevant just because of the perception that he's just trying to put all these people, what are they supposed to do? Go on stage barefoot?
Yeah.
They're just sneakers.
What pastors can't have nice things? They do
have
a hard
things,
job.
They get there, and then the gift thing, you know, supposedly they're getting these as gifts.
There's a whole network of people getting exquisite gifts.
I don't know about that. And I tried to, like a lot of people did, I tried to dig into it. I tried to call these guys and get their thoughts on it. Got nothing in response. Did not hear back, which is understand. Yeah, it's their prerogative.
Right. And it's probably a standard PR strategy. Like, dude, let's just let this blow over.
Yeah. It is a standard PR strategy. So my thought was, it was especially, and since they're in Orlando and I was here in Nashville, and it was a very big deal just among the Nashville. I heard strangers talking about it at the. I just recently did hear. Some people thought it was me because nobody knew who you were at first, but they knew it was a guy named Tyler. So I got like, I don't know how many.
Is this you, bro?
More than one person reached out and said, "I think this is you doing this."
That's so funny.
I wish it was. I wish I thought of it. It's a great idea.
Thank you.
It was very funny. I think that my perception of this is a, and I think you've alluded to this a couple of times since then, which is. It's hard. It's just hard to know what to make of this. We're in unprecedented times right now. And is this a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's hard to say, but we can't just let it happen without talking about it.
Right.
We need to be aware that this is something that's going on. And
that people clearly care about.
And clearly there's an audience for it. And clearly it strikes a lot of people, many of them not Christian, as being very strange.
Uh-huh.
And that should be a like a red flag. That we need to be aware of what to say
right.
when people ask about
and
this.
Not just bury our heads in the sand.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I think that's something that kind of caught a lot of our parents and their parents flat-footed was that Christianity was subsumed by certain cultures, whether that's a political culture or a television, like a TV network.
Mm-hmm.
I think that. There was not an honest conversation about what does this mean, or not enough of one, at
right.
least that I'm aware of, that has lasted long enough to now. So now the moral majority exists, the religious right exists. We don't even really know how we got to this point.
Yep.
How did this happen? Because it wasn't discussed enough, and the potential downfalls of that happening were not part of a significant enough conversation to stop it. And we've seen what happened.
Yeah, and people are weird about money. Like people are... At least in the Christian spheres, people are a lot more prone to talk about purity or sex than they are about spending or about where our heart is with our money. Like, really, like, got it. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Mm-hmm. We can say that. But I my own upbringing, like, I talked so much more about sex and purity than it was about, like, hey, bro, why'd you buy that stupid thing? Like, or where are you finding your identity? Are you finding your identity in the stuff you buy or with your money? So I think culturally it's been a weird – people don't want to touch the money thing because I think, at least for me, I hold close my financial situation and don't want people to say, hey, dude, like, you really aren't saving that much money. Or something like that. So I think at a macro level, a lot of people knew deep down that there was a lot of money in preaching and worship music, maybe. For sure. But nobody, you know, there was no like way to pinpoint why they didn't feel great about it or something.
You can talk about sex, I think, and use that as sort of a, and this is, I don't think this is the stated or even maybe the purpose they're aware of when people talk about this, but it's pretty easy to control people when you talk about sex. It's pretty easy to use that as a cudgel that keeps people in line.
Hmm.
But when you're telling people about money situations, there's not quite that visceral ability to keep people in line there. Because actually, there's more benefit to people in your belief system getting more money and that's helpful. So it doesn't do anybody any good to have a bunch of homeless like that doesn't work at all.
Right.
So
the money goes nowhere if everyone is.
So yeah. I do think there's, and I don't think for most people that's part of the explicit plan, but I think these things naturally just kind of weave into the ways that we, at a gut instinct, talk, the reasons we talk about these things within the Christian belief
system. Yeah, and now it's turned into where it's, like, at a macro level, very a culturally influenced thing. Like, within Western church culture, there are huge churches with impressive point men that, in pretty much every major metropolitan area, that speak really well, mm-hmm. dress really well, mm-hmm. seem to be making a lot of money, write books, go on tours, have really impressive worship bands. And that just kind of all, for whatever reason, came to a head with this whole sneaker thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know it existed. Like, I knew there were mega churches everywhere.
Did you not?
I didn't know. I had heard of Irwin McManus, uh-huh. and I had heard of Carl Lentz as, you know, being the hot Hillsong guy, but I had always sung Hillsong songs. I didn't know about any of the other LA pastors or any other, like, I didn't know who Stephen Furtick was or anything until I started seeing those videos. And now my eyes have been open to all of this. And so it's been interesting how that's just its whole own subculture.
And how has your perspective on it changed since you started the account?
Yeah, I initially I was being a little snarky, just because I was like, this is ridiculous. Mac Brock's wearing $800 sneakers. Yeah, yeah. Like, he's a worship leader. This makes no sense to me. And, you know, being, you know, this is ironic, but being transparent, like, I have issues with money. Like, money is something that I always struggle with. Uh-huh. Like, not having enough, complaining about other people having money, like, in my personal life. Like, that's a real thing.
Sure.
And so some of that was out of that. Like, dude, this is ridiculous. Like, I tithe. And if I ever saw my pastor come out in shoes like this, I would be pissed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I was clearly projecting that. But I had no audience. It was on my personal Instagram. It was 400 followers. All of the people that follow me, like, know me as a person.
Right.
And so I obviously didn't expect this to blow up or expect to be talking to any of these guys. Like, clearly, like, when you do something in your own circle, you don't expect a celebrity to actually see something you're doing.
You don't even want them to.
I don't. No. And then I had a buddy, obviously, you know the story, but that gave me a shout out, and then it blew up pretty much overnight. And so, you know, very quickly, as I'm getting calls from the New York Times and getting calls from Wall Street Journal, I'm also getting calls from Carl Lentz, and he's telling me, like, behind the curtain stuff, like, hey, you know, so and so's getting harassed. Like, I understand why this happened. You know, I don't agree with how you're doing it, but, like, he leveled with me. Obviously, super cool and relatable and everything.
Nice guy, isn't he?
He is a very nice guy, and he's good looking. I wish I looked like that.
It kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You want something bad about him?
God, he's nice.
No, you're really nice. You're really friendly. You're really handsome. You're so handsome.
Speak my language. Did I mention you're so handsome? And so, like, you know, they're telling me, like, you know, like, real stories about walking into a designer store with Justin Bieber and Justin being like, hey, take whatever you want. Mm-hmm. you know, you've helped me change my life. Take whatever you want. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Like I'm a relatively empathetic person. And so I just feel the emotions of other people and like I over-index on understanding the other side too much to where I can't make decisions a lot of times.
Yeah.
So like Carl's talking to me. I'm like, I get what you're saying, bro. Like mm-hmm. I'm probably going to shut this down. Like this doesn't seem fair. But then the other end, there's 200,000 people that are like, no, dude, this, like I'm getting people from like Redeemer messaging me saying like, dude, this is an incredibly important conversation that you're bringing up. Like from the Christian perspective, like we're inundated with consumerism and celebrity and, you know, these guys are supposed to be pointing to Jesus, not themselves. And I'm like, dude, I did not sign up for this. Like I like the attention. I like,
oh, for sure.
I like it being viral. I like the idea that people think I'm funny.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's my favorite things. It's like sneakers and my faith and it's creative and all that. So all that's cool. But at the same time, people are like, dude, you're causing division in the church. Hey, this is a really great conversation to have in the church.
What a terrible. Sounds,
and then atheists are
I'm
like,
getting anxiety just hearing about this. That sounds terrible.
All at once, like atheists, like F these guys. Like, this is why I left the church. And then other Christians be like, dude, how could you do this? Like, call like Matthew 18, you need to go to these guys in person. I'm like, dude, I don't know what to do with any of this. And so I stopped for a couple weeks just because I was like, I need to process this. And like, I brought it to my community group, brought it to my pastor. And of course, no one really had that great of advice except like, check your heart. Like, if you're getting too much identity from this, you probably need to stop. Or is it gossip? Like, you know, you don't want to be fostering this negative environment. And so to answer your question, my perspective is now there's a lot of legitimate things to ask about, like, how can we have a space for church celebrities while we're trying to point to the creator of the universe? That seems like something worth discussing. Like the consumerism thing, like the obsession with brands and the obsession with having nice cars and nice shoes. And especially like as we represent Jesus, who came in a manger, died on a cross, and got buried in a borrowed tomb, that seems to be worth discussing. And then also the thing that fires me up the most is this prosperity gospel bullshit that I have no patience for the straight up sow a seed and you'll get a return thing. That seems evil to me.
Of course.
And we talked about that briefly this summer. But then there's also this kind of somebody called it like a pep rally type preaching where it's a lot of – it feels self-help, motivational, fire up, not a ton of weight or not a ton of like, hey, you're a sinner in need of a savior. More of like, God's got a purpose for you. Live out your purpose and be ready for your blessing.
It's the sort of Marianne Williamson, Oprah meets a little bit of like some biblical language in there. Olstein's the easy target for that. But
but there's
bigger than Olstein.
But yeah, and then now there's a whole kind of new generation of that where it's incredibly entertaining. Mm-hmm. The speakers are really good. Of course, they're going to grow huge congregations. And from that, they're seen as spiritual leaders that are also seen as celebrities. They write books, sell them to their congregations that think they're amazing speakers. And then they speak at all their buddies' churches, get paid to speak there, and then sell their books. And then say, well, he doesn't take a salary. It's just money off his book deals. Mm-hmm. That seems like a self-licking ice cream cone to me, and that seems like something worth addressing. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think you're absolutely, and as you remember talking about this, I think that there's been I think that a lot of the stuff that you're talking about is popular because it works. Like we're in a culture that is craving some sort of, and I think it's built. It's not our culture. It's built into the human heart to want to look towards something above, outside of ourselves. To make ourselves better.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of despair right now, especially there's, you know, people are very, very, there's a lot of anxiety and people want something to be a part of. And Christianity has honestly been kind of tested and seen largely as a failure to do that. So it needed a rebrand, and the rebrand ended up with this sort of amalgamation of a lot of different philosophies, many of which are really good. Like a lot of these are just basic self-care counseling tips that your therapist would tell you if you went to see one. That doesn't mean they're bad. It just doesn't mean it's necessarily a religion. It's not necessarily part of a really well-formed substantive theology.
Mm-hmm.
That's very different, and it's hard, and it's not something that our modern churches are really well-equipped to mass-produce on the scale that we need to maintain the systems that we've put in place and with the sort of money that we do. So it's, I think that it would be to our benefit to say, yeah, there's something to this. We don't mind that people are taking good advice about how to, about self-perception and self-care and believing in yourself and setting dreams and goals and achieving those things, finding peace and healing in their relationship. That's good. And that's, you can even say that's part of the gospel. Mm-hmm. I think that God wants that for us. But I also think we need to maintain a really strict boundary and say, but religion is something very different. And what we believe and what we have been taught and handed down to from the church and from within the Bible and different teachings and the Pope, if that's your, that's different. It is something that's distinct.
Yeah. And the line is incredibly blurry right now. And I think that's what feels icky to me.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And it feels icky to a lot of people is like, just, you know, the logic goes, I'm tithing, the church provides this guy a salary or a platform or whatever, and in turn, it at least looks like he or she is living a luxurious lifestyle off of that. And so the thing that makes me feel the ickiest is that in some of these church cultures or some of these churches, people are giving, thinking they're giving to the kingdom of God, to further the kingdom, to further the operations of the church.
Yeah.
And there's some, it gets convoluted somewhere to where now the pastor is living a lifestyle that to most normal people seems lavish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, so like people will call me out all the time for selling hoodies. And like, I get the criticism there. To me, the difference is like everyone that's ever given me a dollar knows that they're giving me a dollar. And
right.
it's not right. shrouded in some obedience to the word of God. Like, you know, I get like, and that's why early on with the merch and stuff, I gave all the money away. This is my podcast, so I can justify everything on my own podcast. But like, I get the criticism like, oh, how ironic that you're making some money off of this. And granted, you know, I get the irony, but the irony doesn't take away, I think, the value of talking about whether or not it's appropriate.
And isn't that, at that point, aren't you, isn't that kind of the same thing as like, well, Bernie Sanders has three houses. Like it's, you're still, that's, there's that meme about the, and yet you live in a society, interesting. It seems unfair to criticize people who are pointing at what they perceive to be a real issue, but can't completely extricate themselves from the, that's the society, it's like we live in.
It's like Greta Thunberg on the train eating the sandwich out of the plastic bag. Like, oh, how ironic, Greta eating out of a plastic bag.
If anything, these people should be commended for the fact that they still have the clarity to recognize that there's something happening that they're a part of, a system they're a part of, that is, that they think is problematic.
Yeah.
That is wrong. And that's why I think that, to borrow another, like kind of Bernie, I know this isn't the Bernie podcast, this isn't the Seth Rogen podcast, but I think that, you know, I think when you start thinking about wealth inequality in America, and that's a real issue, that's a problem, it's easy to start pointing out the CEOs, the Jeff Bezoses and the Bill Gateses, and that, and sure, that's fine. As long as you're aware that, well, it's not like if these guys just started giving away their money, everything would be fine,
right,
and wealth equality would go away. What you're doing is very similar. You're saying, here are some issues. These are some people who are taking part in it. This points to a broader issue of consumerism and the way the merging of branding and faith in our culture, the way that branding is taking over everything in our culture.
Yep.
And we need to be thinking about this.
Yeah.
That's my take on it. I don't know if that's yours, but that's how I've thought about
it. I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate you saying that because that's what I'm going for. And I know people don't, not everyone sees that because they see the comments, and a lot of the people in the comments are really terrible. Like, and I get that. And, you know, there's something to say like, well, you're creating the environment for them. And I'm also like, okay, yes, of course there are going to be negative comments, but does that negate the need to at least bring it up? And if there's some negative collateral damage that comes from it, I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I try to,
yeah.
The people that are openly just hateful, like I have a media manager that goes in and deletes some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it's impossible to get a hold on all of that, but you know, I don't subscribe to the idea that because there are negative comments, what I'm doing is wrong. I think,
there are terrible
people but it's very.
And it's the internet.
And it's
there's
the internet.
Be negative comments.
There's going to be negative comments, but that's another picture into an issue with the church. Like, I mean, you can clearly tell there's a lot of Christians that show up, Christians, mm-hmm. I'm using air quotes, in the comments that are clearly overly judgmental mm-hmm. or overly, like, not willing to see the other person's side. And that's something in itself, like showing a mirror at people, like, they can comment on someone else's lifestyle but not address their own personal lifestyle from their iPhone or, you know.
It sucks.
It does. Yeah, it does suck.
I hate it.
And so I'm in the middle, kind of like you said earlier, like the anxiety of being in this middle ground where I recognize my flaws and mm-hmm. recognize that I've got a ton of work to do and I have my own issues with money and my own issues with, like, wanting to be famous or having people yeah. think I'm awesome versus, like, seeing everyone else's issues projected in the comments and not knowing what to do with that, which is why I've done it slower and, like, the whole anonymous thing. Like, I'm just waiting for a specific time to, like, reveal my identity. But also, that was a practice. I've said this before, like, and you don't have to believe it, but it's a practice for me because, like, I wanted to go, like, the Today Show asked me to come on and,
oh, did they?
And very early on uh-huh. and I wanted to do that. Like, I was like, oh, this can be awesome. I'm gonna be famous, like yeah. people will know me and see, like, all my ex-girlfriends will, like, finally I could say, show you, like, that's what you get for breaking my heart.
I absolutely believe that. I feel that all the time.
But, like, working through with my wife and my community, they're like, dude uh-huh. I mean, you know, where's your heart really in this? Yeah. Like, do you there was some self-preservation thing just because there was the uncertainty of it all. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen. I had a good internship lined up. My wife works at a big church in Dallas. Sure. And so I just didn't know what they were going to think of it. Like, mm-hmm. there's not a book on how to deal with being
a
viral.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of that was self-serving. And then it turned into a branding thing. And now it's just like, it's more, I mean, real talk, like a PR thing for the book because mm-hmm. I'm writing a book.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
That's super cool.
I appreciate it. And I feel proud of that. Like, it's a validation in that, oh, there's more here than just funny quips uh-huh. and, you know, poking at pastors' Instagrams. Because I wanted to get away from that as quick as possible. Just because, like, you know, I'm very tired of posting pictures of pastors and sneakers.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did. I wanted to, like, grab hold of the more meaningful portion of it, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which I hope when I come out in public, I hope people will see that I meant well.
I think that, I mean, I do too. You never can predict, obviously. But yeah. like I said, I really do believe the issue that you're pointing at is a very real one. I think it's a really important one. And I think that as far as I can tell from my anecdotal perspective, the voices and people that I have respected the most who have talked about preachers and sneakers have appreciated the work that you've done. So I would be, for whatever value that has for radio right now, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, soon enough. Little to none, but I appreciate you saying that. No, seriously, that does mean a lot. And that's not why I brought here to stroke my own ego, but it is helpful to get your perspective because you are very much in the forefront cultural discussions that, like, I mean, that's your whole deal, the intersection of faith and culture. Uh-huh. What do you think about, like, this whole idea of church celebrities or, like, Christian celebrities? So there's two categories to me. Like, there's the Kanyes of the world that are celebrities that converted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those guys.
And then there's the dudes that are celebrities because they're Christians.
They started out as Christians.
Yeah, and then they became celebrities because they're preachers.
More broadly famous.
Yeah, I mean, you've interacted with or written about a lot of these types of people. What are your thoughts on that? Like, if that can exist in a healthy way?
I think there's multifarious things going on with the
great
that
word.
Confluence. And I think that it's very difficult to know. I think the first thing we do need to kind of abandon in our conversation, we the proletariat, the non-famous mm-hmm. Christians, need to abandon is this idea that is trying to judge motive or ascertain motive from a digital distance.
Yeah.
Because it's really, really hard to know how sincere or insincere someone is being about what they're saying over the internet. So when somebody like Kanye West says he's a Christian now, I completely understand and feel the skepticism myself about what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, when a pastor becomes very, very famous and makes a lot of money off of preaching, I feel that same level of skepticism. But I think these things probably don't exist really in a binary. Like, my strong hunch is there's some mixture of, yes, I think they mean this. Yes, this is also just smart business for them, and one assists the other in a way that is really hard for us to know how to talk about, especially on Instagram or Twitter, in a way that's helpful. I think that the church sort of inevitably takes on the tone of the culture around it, which is why you saw a lot of churches becoming businesses in the 80s, because it was a time of big business, and Reaganomics was very successful, and so you started seeing churches run, pastors became more like CEOs, and they started hiring more like a CEO would. Now things are changed. Now it's in the age of a digital brand, it looks a little different. The pastor is more like a brand, and the church is more like the brand managers, and that has some good things about it. Sure.
Yep.
I think that's sort of, there's an appeal to that, and that can work and help reach people who need to, who could use a church. But there's also a lot of danger in that, because a brand isn't going to fight itself. A brand can't critique itself. It's against the brand's whole thing.
Brands are meant to be elevated.
Yeah, yeah. So if something bad happens, the brand is going to work together to try to, like a virus. So if a pastor does something wrong, which goodness knows they do, right? And or if there's something that's going on with the money, or even if God is calling them to do something that isn't very cool, which God does frequently, the more your church looks like a brand, I think the less equipped you're going to be to listen to that and heed that.
Man, that's a good word. Yeah. Yeah, because that is such a good word about because the culture we as lay people that attend these churches have created the need, or maybe the culture has created it, the transition to becoming more of a branded organization, a branded, like the pastors being a personality that people go to see, it is inherently a conflict for them to look at themselves and say, what are we doing wrong? Let's publicly say what we're doing wrong. Mm-hmm. But then that's so easy for people on the outside to just turn that into vitriol. Mm-hmm. And and that, I mean, that's kind of what's happened a little bit with my account.
Sure.
And so we're all, I think, so the takeaway, I mean, this is still such freaking no man's land or no woman's land as far as how we as Christians are to handle all these things. Mm-hmm. But I think it's got to be something he wants us to work through, or pray about, or seek counsel about. The tough thing is that the people that are older than us, or that we see as wise counsel, a lot of them haven't gone through any of this stuff because this didn't exist.
We're untested waters.
Yeah,
we're having to figure our own way out here.
Yeah,
and that's why it is really tough. And it's not like there aren't churches that aren't figuring this out, because there are. I think that. There's a lot of people, and I get to talk to a lot of these pastors at Relevant who are doing really cool stuff, but you're not going to hear about these people because a lot of the cool stuff they're doing, just, it doesn't market well. It's not super sexy, or it makes people mad. A lot of the best things that a lot of Christians and churches and ministries are doing right now is the sort of stuff that you're not supposed to do. It's protesting, or it's defying certain people in positions of power and influence. And I think that's really important. I think it's a part of the call of the church to do so with wisdom and force.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the ticket to being successful as a church.
Yeah, and I guess one last note on the side of the pastors, like, you know, if you put yourself in these guys' shoes, like, clearly they're gifted speakers. They know that they have the gift of teaching or preaching. And wouldn't all of us want to do something that we feel gifted at? And also, if someone said, hey, I'll pay you $100,000 to write about this or to go do this, are you really in your heart of hearts turning that down? I don't know. I don't know if I'm big enough to say, this thing that I feel so much life out of doing, someone's going to offer to pay me and shower me with exquisite gifts for doing. No, I'm not going to do that because I don't care. I don't want people to think that I'm profiting off of.
And the financial realities, like these people have kids,
right?
You know, they've got it. They've got, even if they're not nice houses, they have houses. So if somebody, like, people are struggling with money. We don't have a lot of it. So somebody says, "I'll give you a lot of it." You're like, "Oh, thank God! Finally,
this changes my year.
My ship has come. Look how God provided for me." And yeah, it'd take a lot of self awareness. And people do it, but it would take a lot of self-awareness to be like, you know what? No, I'm going to do this one on the house.
And so I see both sides, and I also have bills to pay and a house to pay for and dogs to feed. I think that's, you know, indicative of the need to work through these things, much like we worked through, or the church worked through issues about, or are still working through issues about race and sexuality and all that kind of thing. I think, you know, got it. This is maybe a secondary issue, but it's worth all of us understanding that people care about it and trying to find answers or trying to find wisdom in this.
Unfortunately, the Bible just doesn't talk about how to treat the rich or the poor at all. So we're really kind of out. There's
maybe there'll be another Dead Sea Scroll that talks about
there. Yeah, nothing in there about if a rich person comes into church, where should you tell them to sit? The Bible doesn't say. It's a mystery. Theologians have wrestled with that one for millennia, and we're not going to solve that one today.
If only God would speak. God, speak into this issue, please. No, that's a really good word. Tyler, I know we're out of time, but sure. You're working on some interesting things at Relevant. If people want to check you out in the internet sphere, where can they find you?
At Tyler Huckabee on Twitter is really the best place to. I'm not super active on any. My Instagram account is languishing, cobwebs.
Which is probably wise. How's your mental health?
Somebody's probably taking it over. It's probably some Russian bot now. Telling you to,
but if you look at his tweets, you might think that's a Russian bot too.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's mostly comic book discussions political flair.
My tweets aren't for everybody. So
it's worth checking out.
I'm giving you the warning right now. But yeah, if you want, I am at Tyler Huckabee, and I am on Twitter. Too much. It's rotten my turned my brain into brain
just
worms.
A pure cesspool of negativity.
Internet brain. It's real. And
he also writes on Relevant Magazine. He's on the Relevant Podcast. Check that podcast out. I mean, you guys are on there 5 days a week.
There's the Relevant Daily, which is like 10 minutes. Just catch up on like the stuff that we're the intersection of faith and culture. And then the Mothership, the Relevant Podcast, the main is twice a week. And actually, I was sent to ask you if you wanted to join us sometime. Would you? Just
oh, really?
Yeah. Just to.
I mean, I don't know if you can afford me.
Yeah.
But
I know you can.
No, absolutely. Would love to. I guess y'all do it remotely.
We got Jesse's in Virginia on Virginia Beach, and I'm down here. So you could come from Dallas or wherever it is.
I would love to.
You're all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically where the hoodie money is going to, like, just, I mean, I'm not making a profit. I'm just paying for these coffees.
They're cool hoodies.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Are
Thanks.
There any around here? I need to leave with
them. I didn't bring any cause these were super expensive, but I will for the next one, especially if I come on y'all's.
Yeah.
I'll hook you up. Don't worry.
That wasn't what I was coming. That's not why I asked.
The least I could do for how much I paid for you to come do this podcast. All right. Well, Tyler Huckabee, thanks for spending time with me.
Thanks, man.
Don't tell anybody who I am.
Of course.
And we will talk later.
All right.
No sponsors for the podcast today. All I ask is that you like, review, and subscribe to the Preachers and Sneakers podcast if you haven't already. Follow me on Instagram at Preachers and Sneakers and on Twitter at Preachers and Sneakers with no vowels, PRCHRSNKRS. Is that it? PRCHRSNSKRS. Yes, Preachers and Sneakers without any vowels. There's not nearly as many followers on Twitter, and so I say maybe more open-minded things or more pointed things on Twitter than maybe I do on Instagram. So feel free to follow or not. I mean, nothing matters anymore. No one can go anywhere. So if you want to be entertained with my spin on content saturation, feel free to follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I've got a YouTube channel and a TikTok, but I'm not producing anything over there right now. Feel free to subscribe to those. But yeah, the biggest thing right now is if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the Preachers and Sneakers podcast on Apple iTunes. That's the biggest platform for me as far as the podcast. So I really appreciate it. I'm grateful for you listening, spending the time, and hope you got something out of it. And please tune in for the next episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.